Welcome, everybody, to the Patreon exclusive By the Players, a community podcast made by you, the community, where each and every month we hop in a Discord channel to chat about games. This month, we are talking about Sea of Stars. So with all that said, and with all that out of the way, let's get right into the discussion.
So let's get stuck into Sea of Stars, and let me quickly go into a little bit of Sabotage Studios. So Sabotage is not an old studio by any means. It was founded in 2016 by Thierry Boulanger. I pronounced that correctly. So he's the creative director, together with Martin Brouard. He's the technical director in Quebec City. So yes, Canadian. So we have some Canadians here today. And their focus was retro-inspired games with pixel art aesthetics. And their vision was crafting a memorable gaming experiences rooted in nostalgia with a modern twist. And they have a passionate dedication to quality, creativity, and community engagement. And I think we've seen that, right? Now, I haven't played The Messenger. There are two people here that have played it. So I'm pretty keen to hear your thoughts and maybe some of the Easter eggs that, was available or was seen in The Messenger. And so Sea of Stars development, so it's a turn-based RPG set in The Messenger universe. So for me, it's the first time it already was mentioned. It's the renowned composer Yasunori Mitsuda, who composed the music for Chrono Trigger, was involved in creating the game's music. There was a Kickstarter campaign that raised over 1.5 million, I think, totally of 1.6. And there is a YouTube documentary as well where they describe the development journey that Sea of Stars went through. And it's definitely worth having a look. For me, it's always keen. I'm always keen to see what the creative process looks like, right? Whether it be musicians, right? Whether it be chefs or here, whether it be game developers and how the people collaborate. I think it's really awesome. So the development approach is an emphasis on the immersive storytelling and an engaging gameplay, stunning pixel art visuals, drawing inspiration from classic RPGs while introducing innovative mechanics, which we've seen in combat, for example, and they focus on a player-driven exploration and narrative choices. And I think even on that aspect, we will have something to discuss today with regards to some of the liberties they took. So the first question, and I'm not going to go by person, I'm just going to let you, if this question speaks to you, if you feel energy in this question, then just come forth and tell me how you feel. So what initially drew you into the world of Sea of Stars, and what expectations did you have, and how did they align with the experience of the game? So did it meet those expectations that you had previously? So whoever would like to answer.
I'll jump in here quick. Yes, you mentioned The Messenger just moments ago. I am one of those who played The Messenger. Might be one of my favorite indies of all time. Absolutely love that game. I think that was the second game I played on Switch after Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. So it hit me at a really great time. Love the world. The fourth wall breaking humor that they had in that game, the way it presented itself, not too seriously, but in a serious kind of setting. Really, really spoke to me. So when I heard Sabotage was developing Sea of Stars and that it was sort of taking elements of those old, pixel RPGs, I was, following this right along. I didn't kickstart it, but I was following all the developments and all that stuff. And it totally met my expectations. I just was looking to have a fun time, learn a little bit more about this universe, see how Sea of Stars sort of ties together with The Messenger, which was incredible. A lot of the ways that they did that. I can't say enough good things about Sea of Stars. One of my favorites of the year for sure.
Very cool.
I actually, same with you, Hambone. I actually remember covering this Kickstarter on the Trophy Room of like, hey man, like I think it was like in like Flash News, like this looks like really good and it's not even my type of game, but like the visuals appeal to me in such a strong way. Because It's so, in a way, it's like familiar, but at the same exact time, current. I don't know. That's the best way I could describe it because I'm dumb. But like, there was just something captivating about how this game looked, and every update that they gave for me, I got more and more excited by it. Because like, I know of the Messenger. I've never gotten to play it, when it first came out, or get really deep with it. I just know that Sabotage is a really talented studio, and what they're able to achieve both in like making a game look retro, making it even in a certain extent like feel retro, but also having it at the same exact time be a modern telling of like this is what a game that we know in the 90s should play like in a modern control scheme. So to me, that's what got me really, really excited for Sea of Stars. And again, as I'm playing it and as I'm diving deeper into it, yeah, it's meeting all my expectations.
Yeah, I think you would be hard pressed to find anyone that didn't say the visuals were a big part of what drew them to this game because I am not from I wasn't familiar with Sabotage. I didn't play the Messenger. It's one of those things that like I saw this at some showcase, whether it's a Direct or Xbox, where they're showing it off, and it's immediately you get drawn in. You're like, what is this? Because there's a lot of JRPG or JRPG inspired games with like pixel art and kind of that go for that old school vibe. But there's something I think special about the way Sabotage has presented Sea of Stars, the colors they use, how vibrant the world looks. Like you want to be in this world immediately. You want to experience. And I think that's something that other studios didn't really capture, and that's what kind of made me so invested into this, where I was like, from what the gameplay was, I was like, I didn't see anything like, oh my God, I have to play this game. It's really like this world looks so stunning that I have to experience this.
Yeah, and just to quickly call out the lighting effects for sure. Like, it's definitely something that really drew me in, right? It's playing on day and night and all that stuff, but even like the way they use shadows and you feel like you're in that world and you're impacting that world with all the actions you take, or it's really cool. Sorry to cut you off there,
Yeah,
man.
it's no, that's okay. Yeah, like I said before, I mean, my journey started with Chrono Trigger, and when I found out that this game was heavily inspired by Chrono Trigger, I was like interested right away. And with the visuals, like you guys are saying, it's like a modern, from a visual perspective, it's almost like a modern version of Chrono Trigger, right? And the other thing, so obviously when I found out about Sea of Stars, I started going down that rabbit hole and discovered the Messenger. And after playing the Messenger for like 20 minutes, I was hooked. I was like, I have to back this project. I have to do whatever I can to make sure it comes to light. And the other thing too is the music, right? Like the music in the Messenger is just unbelievable. It's so catchy and it matches the visuals. I don't know if that makes sense, but in the
Totally.
sense of like putting a modern twist on the retro music, right? So
Very
yeah,
good.
that's
And he
definitely old
was
man.
okay. Go for it.
Yeah, to me it was I mean, the first time I saw the trailer, I fell in love with it because I saw that it was something. I mean, we saw that all around the world, saying that it was a love letter for to JRPGs. It was something that I was looking for because, we've been replaying lots of these old games like Chrono Trigger and the old Final Fantasy, and but new JRPGs are nothing like that anymore, right? So it was something that to me it was, hey, it's something modern. Let's see how it goes, and it met my expectations. Actually, exceeded my expectation. When I started the game, I thought, okay, this is a regular JRPG game. Then we started seeing the twists, the combat mechanics, the all these things that they felt retro, but they were also modern. And every new thing that they introduced, it wasn't something that you felt it was forced. It was actually something that fit their theme. And like everybody said, the music and the soundtrack, It was it's spectacular. It's something that I actually still listen on Spotify like constantly, because you know the boss soundtracks, boss fight soundtracks, they are excellent. They're amazing.
Very nice. Yeah, Kevin.
I actually discovered the game in a kind of unorthodox kind of manner. So I first heard about this game on a Linus Tech Tips podcast.
Wow.
Where, so Linus was talking about this game and he described it as a spiritual successor to Chrono Trigger. And I was like, okay, I gotta see what this is about. So I looked up the Steam page for it and was like, wow, this looks amazing. Immediately wishlisted it and followed the game ever since that. From that point on, and then when the game came out, it just completely blew me away. Mm-hmm. Like, just the art style and the animation work as well for like pixel art animations is just absolutely spectacular. Like when you're doing the little fast travel thing with the golems and they just chuck you across the world map and stuff, just the first time I saw that, I was like, whoa.
Yeah,
this is like some next level stuff here. But like going back to the music, and I mentioned Mitsuda earlier, but the lead composer, Eric W. Brown, who also went by Rainbow Dragon Eyes when he did the Messenger soundtrack. Fun piece of music trivia about him. He's actually involved. He's the drummer in the metal band Necrogoblicon. And Wizard Throne. So he's like heavily involved in like the metal music scene, and like you can actually, knowing that, you can hear a little bit of that influence in his music as well. But he also brought on another guest to kind of assist him that he was close personally with. Give me a second to look his name up again really quick. A guy named Vincent Jake Jones, and he is the vocalist and bassist in another metal band called Aether Realm, and they're like a melodic technical death metal band. So like me being a huge metalhead and stuff, is like as soon as I found this out about this music, I was like, oh, this is just even like bigger for me, and I got even more into it and stuff. But yeah, just his composing style in The Messenger and Sea of Stars, just I absolutely love his style. And there are, I mean, Drellish, you mentioned you haven't played The Messenger yet, but you will hear when you do play The Messenger some recurring themes and stuff that he brought back in the Sea of Stars soundtrack and redid it in the Sea of Stars style. And it's just, he's so good, remarkably talented composer. And I would absolutely say my expectations for this game were well, well made and probably exceeded quite a fair bit.
Very nice. Very nice. For me, if I just reflect,
go for it, Michael.
For me, it was definitely like a pixel art year. I think if I think the RPGs that I played this year, so the first game that I actually finished this year was God of War, and then I went immediately to Octopath Traveler 2, and that was like kind of my first pixel art game of this year, where I said, okay, let me see what this is about, and I was totally floored by the way that Octopath was crafted story-wise, the art, totally beautiful. And then Marcus and I, you know, also belong to another gaming group, and we did the Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster, the very first one. We played that as well, right? So another pixel remaster game. And so it's almost like in the flow when Sea of Stars came up to say, well, it's a given, right? Third time is the lucky charm, so to say. And what I'm really impressed, I just, you know, read you guys what the designers stand for, what their vision was. If you look at what the studio aimed to achieve with the games that they tackled, I must say that if I look at Sea of Stars, I've got to give them a tick mark with regards to every point they put down in their vision. Because I think they've met it, right? There is nothing in Sea of Stars where it's say, okay, and this does not really fit the DNA of Sabotage, right? So extremely well done. Sorry. Marcus.
Yeah, so I was just going to say what initially drew me to Sea of Stars was a very similar story to Hambone, actually. So I was big into The Messenger when it first came out on Switch. I played it. Total surprise, really. It was reviewing well. It's in a genre that I tend to gravitate towards, these 2D action platformer, Metroidvania sorts of games. And I fell in love. I loved everything about The Messenger. And then when it came to PlayStation, I 100%ed it on Switch. I platinumed it on PlayStation. And I think it was around that time, maybe Hambone, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's when they announced Sea of Stars. So it wouldn't have mattered what Sabotage's next game was. I was in. I was 100% in. And the fact that it was in basically the other main genre that I love, which is turn-based RPGs. It looked beautiful. I was like, my expectations couldn't be higher. And maybe talking a little bit about the second part of this question, how did my expectations align with my experience of the game? My expectations were probably too high. When I played the game, I played just to the main ending. I didn't do the true ending until shortly before this session, and I would say I enjoyed the main part of the game, but I didn't love it as much as I thought, and maybe part of that is on me, because my expectations were so high. It's not that I didn't enjoy it, but it didn't quite reach this kind of standard that I had in my head for this, basically this impossible standard. I appreciated the game much more after having played the additional content following the credits, and we'll talk a little bit more about that at a later question. But yeah, in terms of expectations, I just wanted to touch on that.
Very nice. I think I have to second that as well, Marcus. I was very hyped. And I think the first half of the game was like, it's good, but there's just something that's missing, right, for me. You know? So, but yeah, I think that's, we'll discuss what that is just now. Let's go to the second question. In what ways do the central themes of friendship, sacrifice, and destiny appear throughout the story? So here, I think, just reflect the characters and their story beats, and what characters come to mind specifically when you're looking at those three central themes.
I got this, boys. I'll kick it off here. Shout out to my boy Garl. He's the true OG. Also, just so you know, guys, just because I know everybody here has beaten this game, platted this game, except for me, because you know,
I haven't. Well, I beat it. I didn't plat it.
Yeah. Well. Get to it. But
plats on Steam.
But please, like, pull no punches. Spoiler warning for this part, forward. But like, shout out to my boy Garl, because this is a person that has no quote unquote powers, and has consistently always been there in a supportive role for his friends, and cheers them on constantly. And even when he's told like he shouldn't, or that this is a little bit too hard for you, bud, he's just like, no, I listen, big man in the sky told me I could come with him, so I'm coming with him. I don't care, I don't got no powers. That's my boy right there. So Garl being the number one companion that I love so much, he's my friend. So yeah, it's all about that sacrifice. He sacrificed an eye for you guys, you know?
Well, he also sacrificed his life,
Sorry,
Joe,
spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler.
He's gonna, like, he's best boy. He's going to lay down his life. All right. I'm ready. Listen, I'm ready for it. I'll brace it.
Okay, yeah, so Garl he exemplifies all of these, right? Like, when he gets told like, hey, you're gonna die, you got a limited time frame remaining, his number one thing is, well, I gotta help my homies, like I gotta help these two accomplish their goals, we gotta save the world. He doesn't care, like, yeah, he's like, he's not over there like crying and saying like, oh well, like, can we save me, like, that's what we should be focused on. He's like, we gotta do this other stuff first, it's more important than me. So he knows his destiny, he's ready to sacrifice himself just for his friends. Like, I don't know how a character besides Garl could be like the mascot for this theme, for this game, which I like Garl. I didn't use him very much, to be honest with you guys. But we can get to that. But like, he definitely is the one that I think exemplifies the main theme of this game. And if you want to talk about destiny and like breaking it, you have the older two elemental warriors who are like, we don't want to do our destiny and fight the evil people for the rest of our lives until we die. And they kind of make a deal and betray everyone, you know, which is like the most obvious plot twist in the world. But also is like, I don't know, I get it. Like, if someone told you from birth, hey, this is what you're gonna do for your life, and you don't really get a choice, I can kind of understand not wanting to be like, well, I have no other, like, I get no choices, nothing I do, nothing I want matters, because this is what it is.
Also, if we could shout out to, I'm just trying to get her name, because names for me, it's like my worst quality. The rogue lady with the knives.
Sarai.
Yeah, Sarai.
Oh, thank you.
Shout out Sarai.
Shout out Sarai. I love her. Like, I'm going to pop out of like portals and shoot like daggers out. And having legitimately one of just like the coolest designed characters in this game. She's such a badass. Yeah.
Have you seen her ultimate move?
Describe it for me, please.
The ship.
The ship and the cannons.
No, not yet.
Well,
okay. All right.
No, I think I might be getting to that point.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. We'll get there.
Very cool. And actually the plot twist, I mean, it was obvious that she was the captain. Yep. And I was like, they're going to do this thing. Everybody's going to be surprised. And it's fun that they actually realized that this plot twist was going to be super obvious. And they actually joked about that, like, in-game. Like, yeah, we kind of knew already. So that was something that was really interesting, because typically games don't realize how obvious some plot twists are. Not only games, actually, TV shows and movies, there are things that you can see from miles away, and then we have to pretend to be shocked. But yeah, her design, and actually the fact that suddenly the game becomes some sort of futuristic RPG, it's also was a surprise for me. I wasn't expecting something like that. And honestly, it's the part that I enjoyed the most close to the end of the game. And also that her story, her backstory is fantastic, and the reason that she was there, also trying to fight destiny in terms of saving her own world and going after the warriors. I wasn't expecting something like that. In the beginning of the game, I was thinking, hey, this is just a regular RPG story, and then things started happening and stacking on top of each other, and it was, hey, this is... This thing actually got layers.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you called out Sarai's captain persona. I mean, she was Captain Cliche. Like, what's better than that? So, like, right in your face. That's like sabotage at its best. That fourth wall. Just hey, you know what we're doing, but you're along for the ride. Like, jump in the boat. Let's go. You know.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
And they do it so well in this game too, and like, so like, that's why, like, for me, I'm like, okay, so like, where's the twist? Because sabotage is so good at putting those twists in there, and then also like doing the thing again. It's like typical, like, what is a game in the, like, in the SNES PS1 like era? What's that gonna, you know, what are the tropes there, and how can we play with those tropes in really interesting ways is what I love.
Absolutely.
Also, shout out to Sarai's attitude, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about the characters, and I think most of the characters in this game are pretty hopeful and positive and forward-looking, right? Not that Sarai isn't those things, but she's also a little snarky, right? Like, she's always talking back to the bad guys. like screw you, how dare you treat my friends like that. Always sticking up for people, which I thought was pretty cool.
Very nice. Delicious.
Only thing that I don't like about her is because the only missable trophy actually is related to her. So I almost missed that one because of her.
Fair.
Nice. Colin, go for it.
But yeah, I think what Kevin said about Garl really is what I plan to say too. I mean, everything about this kind of points to Garl. I mean, he was right there from the beginning, the friends that even after 10 years of being separated from his friends, and then they meet up again for the first time, and there's no like ill thoughts toward them at all or anything. He's not disappointed he had to be away for 10 years. He's just immediately hops right back in, like he just saw him yesterday. He's like, all right, guys, let's get going. And just I loved also his tendency to like befriend the bad guys as well. Like he would first try to like even find the light in the bad guys, like the I forget his name, the mole guy though.
Mm-hmm.
In the, like, he's like, hey man, why do you want to fight us? Let's just be friends. You just need a friend, so I'll be your friend. And there's so many examples of that throughout the story. I loved him. And getting to the sacrifice and destiny, I mean, the Elder Mist told him straight up, it's like, hey, there's going to be something very, very important that only you can do, and you're not going to know what that is until it's too late. And like, he's like, okay, I got this. And then, yeah, he makes the ultimate sacrifice and assists his friends, Zael and Valir, in completing their destiny of becoming the new, forget the terminology of what they called them, but they become the
Saltus warriors. Yeah.
But his destiny was assisting them in completing theirs, all in being there for them and stuff. So I think Garl is like the central point to this entire story and theme.
Yeah. Plus, his food looked amazing, even in pixel art.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Dude, shout out to that art team, because like, first of all, like Breath of the Wild, like Tears of the Kingdom had some like delicious looking food, right? Like I'm like, yeah, I want to make that. And then like Sea of Stars is like, hold my beer, I'm gonna show you what an IPA is, you know? Like it looked stunning. Yeah,
Warrior really, Cook's gonna show you how it's done.
Yeah, but really he really is Samwise. And that's what what I love the most about him. He's like, yeah, like he's the a central character, but he's not like the main character, but he's like he doesn't just like know his role, like he embraces it. And that's I love him, man.
And for
me, I would say jump in here, he may not be the central character in that we're not controlling him, but everything in the story revolves around Garl and Garl's actions, and Garl's everything that we're doing as players is contingent on Garl. And yes. So I think like he really does exemplify this, the message or the spirit of the game. And, you know, yes, we do use a lot of tropes, like RPG tropes, in terms of we got to save the world from this existential threat, but really this game is about friendship and the power of friendship. As corny as that is, this is what this game is. And I think like that sweet component is really endearing, or kind of what is so attractive about the story of Sea of Stars. And I think like that, we're going to touch on it, I think, in the next question, but I think that is why I am a little confused as to why they hid part of that behind the credits, because I think we get a much fuller appreciation for Garl's role in all of this narrative by playing out the stuff that happens after the first credits roll. So yeah,
let me pick up on that. I think there is no debating that that Garl definitely is the hero. And you know, let's just quickly focus on two things. One thing is that the tools that he has in order to assist. He's got a lid, the lid of a cauldron, right? He's got no magic weapon or spear or sword. He's got a lid. Okay, yeah.
It's, or skill. He doesn't have any, like, he's got his character, but he doesn't have training. He doesn't have, you know, all of these,
exactly,
these, the skill set that you would think that would be helpful to a party that's needing to save the world.
Exactly. But what he can do is he can make sure that the adventurers and the heroes, in inverted commas, are well fed. He has, and I think this is so critical, right? The attitude and the mindset that he puts to the day is actually that even though when the chips are down, right, he remains positive, even though he knows that, you know, he doesn't have much time. He kind of pulls himself together and always, you know, puts on his best face in order to encourage the others to do what they need to do. However, I do also, I mean, this is a story about changing destiny, right? So destiny here in this context is not fixed, right? So you have to unfortunately go beyond the credits to to maybe experience, right? So destiny was changed. And I quickly wanted to highlight Moraine. And so first of all, Moraine is a weird name for me because Moraine, I immediately think of Aes Sedai, Wheel of Time, right? Moraine, and you know, how come, right? Male didn't fit, right? So always associated Moraine as with a female. But be it as it may, Moraine has a history. And if I compare Moraine to, I think, similar heroes that we have in popular literature, so kind of the mentor, right, be it the Yoda or be it the Gandalf, right, so maybe he looks a little bit more like Gandalf. What's interesting with Moraine is that he's gone through a war. If you look at the story that went before, right, he's one of the survivors that came through after a major catastrophe, and he's kind of old, kind of licking his wounds, still, you know, trying to do the thing that needs to be done. So he's kind of very much, he safeguards the customs, right, that world was going through. And what I found interesting was that they depicted this character as really being graceful and being a resource for the others to use if they wanted to, but he was not a character that was afraid to not be in the first line, right? Not the Gandalf on the forefront, but kind of being in the second row, kind of being, say, okay, guys, you know, I'm there if you need me. I'm just gonna go and chill here in this wonderful island. I just want my own little my own little house, right? So if you guys need me, I'm there. And I really found that graceful, right? The fact that they did not, again, push a major character, but I think they gave him value for what he was and for what he meant in the bigger context of the story. So, I thought that was a good way to honor that which went before. In the way that they developed his character. So for me, this is a game that, yes, destiny can be changed. And it's not about who has the greater weapons or the best skills or the most powerful. But I think it is in servitude, right? It's in the servitude of those around, very much like a servant spirit, that often wins the day. So this is what I, you know, took away from this particular question. So, Joe, you're still there. I'm just checking your videos off now. So, I hope he's there.
Mm.
Okay. Any other things that come to mind before we move on to question three?
From the actually the older Solstice Warriors, Erlina and Brogaves as well. They also they also fight their own destiny in some sort of way, because they, I mean, obviously they're the villains. I mean, Erlina Easbrook is clearly just being dragged by her, but anyway. And it's interesting because that was the moment where I realized that the story wasn't going to be that standard one, and we're just going to keep finding dwellers and stuff like this. Because they were being seen as some sort of mentors by Valir and Zale. And then they realized they are the actual villains from the story, at least from the first ending. And to me, this is interesting because, I mean, we've seen that kind of stuff happen all the time in games and then in all sorts of media. But it's we could feel the betrayal from them. Because they actually looked up to them ever since they were kids, and we could see the hurt, and especially because it was actually the moment where Garl also is hurt, and you could see that that moment was very 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 impactful, and really made the story go to another level, because then we realized we weren't just fighting like nameless demons we know with no backstory. We actually were finding our own mentors, so that to me was really important as well.
Very nice.
Yeah, to kind of piggyback on that, one thing that really kind of hammered that home as well is they didn't really go along and become the villains because they had evil intent. They were just tired of their lot in life and saw that as the best way out. And it just sort of became this tragedy and really, really, yeah, played into their stories as well.
Totally with you, Colin. I don't see them as I think villain is almost too strong. But I think because we can follow their story, they're gray. No, they're not black and white. They're gray. And I think we're just looking at... two people that I think approach things differently, because she has magical powers, but he doesn't. No, if you kind of go into a little bit of, so it's, he's almost like also like a Gale figure, if you think about it, right? Except that he's obviously a great fighter, and I think he has a magic weapon, and there is some magic that happens there, but he has in himself no magic qualities or skills. Per se. And this is kind of, you know, giving in almost, right? Giving in to whatever they feel is destiny and the inevitable. So, and that describes their story. So I think also very poignant, also how it ends for both of them, right? So.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think I would have liked to see a little bit more from their stories, to be honest. Maybe a little bit more in terms of like why they made the choices they made, right? Like what their intentions really were. Like you said, they're kind of gray. I don't think they're necessarily evil at their core, right? I mean, it was basically just like, hey, we don't want to be Solstice Warriors anymore, so we're going to let this entire world die. Right? I think I would have liked to see that fleshed out a little bit more. That doesn't really kind of seem like a good enough reason, right? To let an entire world, an entire universe die. Yeah. So maybe just a little bit more would have been nice, but
would be a great DLC though to see unmistakable characters.
And maybe there's a redemption story somewhere in there. Who knows, right? So I think everybody deserves a redemption story. So, yeah.
Well, very I nice. Always got the sense that they thought it was a fruitless endeavor, you know, because like they're like, we've had Solstice Warriors for.
Ever.
However long, yeah, forever, and nothing has really changed. Like they even had a giant war where most of them died, and it's like it almost felt to me like they were like, we don't want to be Solstice Warriors because it's pointless. Like we're just I don't think they were necessarily evil. They were almost like we give up. Like we just accept. We just accept. This is pointless.
Exactly.
That's a good point. Even Moraine kind of does the same thing, right? He kind of gives up too. So
totally,
yeah.
And it's almost like accepting this is our lot in life, and you know we just have to accept it and live with it. And there's some goodness in that as well, right? Acceptance, right? but it's in total opposition to where Gaul is going, right? So or what he stood for, right? Even at the end, right? So he's the one that challenges the flesh monster, and you know, throws the apple at him and says, you know, you've got to start fighting your own battles. And there's a message in that, right? You've got to start fighting your own battles. Yeah, and so it kind of is the lead in to the ending that we had. So
yeah, now that I think about it, it kind of adds a little bit more weight to the hopefulness that Garl brings to the story, right?
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
Like he's so hopeful in a world where almost everybody's lost hope, right? So
he's Garl's like the foil to them, like, and not even them, but the whole other world that Sarai comes from, like where Sarai is kind of that world's only hope. Garl is very much like, I am the hope for everyone.
Hmm.
Yeah, and maybe, I mean, I think that if Valyr and Zael didn't really have Garl, maybe they would have given up as well. Because once the plot twist happens, they were hopeless and they needed some sort of friend to make them go back and actually fight back. And maybe it's that was missing in Erlina and Brigave's lives. Just yeah, a girl.
I was gonna say that that opens up an interesting conversation to what would have happened if Erlina and Brigave's had a friend like Garl.
Mm.
But they didn't, because they took the more traditional solstice warriors. Like, you're gonna go to this academy, and that's everyone else is dead to you at that point.
Interesting. So the discussion makes me think of something that happened to me this year, specifically. And I love what we're talking about here, and the role that Garl had. So two things come to mind. You know, one thing, that if you let your motivation come from the outside and you look at the world, then you might feel doom and gloom, right? Garl, his hope was very much internal, was very much intrinsic, was very much in contrast to what was out there. And this year I needed to do some research on the explorers who went to the Antarctica. And so Ernest Shackleton, if you ever come across his name, he was the one that actually went down and never was able to. He went on three trips, and on the third trip he actually passed, he actually died. So he went down for the second time in 1916 on the verge of the, or 1916 on the verge of the First World War, and or 1914, I think it was. And he got trapped with the crew of 27 men in the ice for a period of 2 years. And one of the leadership lessons that we learned from him was the question, how did he keep, you know, they didn't have mobile phones, right? So for them to organize to be rescued was a major mission. And the question that arises here is, how did he keep 27 men motivated for a period over 2 years when the boat that they had was crashed by the ice and they needed to move on to the ice and live there for that extended period? How do you keep men motivated who have no hope or very little hope of being rescued? And very interesting that Shackleton said, as soon as he found that the men were demotivated, so he had some routines, right? So everybody needed to know what they needed to do. In the evenings, so Shackleton always hired for attitude, and he never hired for skills, or not only for skills. And so in the evening around the fire, he said, you know, no man should sleep alone in his tent. We should all be gathered. And when the motivation is down, what is the thing that I do is I double their rations. So because a man with a full stomach is way more motivated than someone who is hungry and desperate. And so for me, this idea of, you know, Garl is the person who made sure that when things are looking down, that there was enough food around for everyone, right? The warrior cook, so to say. This is the way that he actually boosted morale. And I think this is very also true of life. So guys, when you're feeling down, make sure that you eat lots of comfort food, right? Sorry, many muffins. Sorry.
God, yeah, Kevin. Listen, I felt that in the past month. Are you kidding me?
No, but just interesting, right? So also the importance of keeping your tummies full, right? And that the goal, the role that goal played there. Very good. Let's move on to, if that's okay, let's move on to the next question. So question three, significant story content is found after the game's credits, right? So we already hinted on this or spoke about this a bit or touched upon this. So how do you feel about this approach? And do you think this approach was effective in any way?
I'm going to start.
No, go ahead.
Go, Marcus.
I didn't like it. I really didn't like it.
for the people in the back, Marcus.
Yeah, like this is my biggest issue with the game in general, is that I think that I was thinking why did they do this? Why did they choose to do this? And I almost feel like they chose to do it this way because they were staying so true to traditional RPG JRPG thing where other games have done this that they felt they needed to kind of have that too. But I think it shouldn't be optional. Like this, the content, particularly in terms of the story, the content that happens after those first credits happen are essential to appreciating the entire story. So I was not a fan of how they did this. I think it certainly influenced my appreciation for the game as a whole. To that point, you know, I played to the first set of credits, you know, a few weeks after the game released, and then I put it down for a few months, and it didn't really sit that well with me to that point. Like, it was fine. It was a good game. I enjoyed my time with it, but it wasn't something that I thought much about afterwards, to be perfectly honest. And then going back, preparing for this session and doing the true stuff, I really got a full sense. And it made me a little bit annoyed that stuff was behind those credits, those first credits. So, yeah, no, I wasn't a fan. That's my biggest issue with this game. And so I'll let other people kind of chime in here, but that's my feelings for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think I understand this is a trope and they were playing with that. But the thing is that the fake ending actually kind of sucks. It's sudden. You don't end up fighting the very villain you were actually going to originally, the Flashmancer. And for me, it didn't impact as much because I was originally planning to plat the game anyway. So after the ending, I just started playing the post-game content. And so to me, it didn't really impact the story. But I know that's not the case for most players. And even though the ending has a question mark after the end. I think most people would actually skip the credits. I mean, the average gamer would probably do so. And they would probably say, hey, the game is good, but the ending kind of sucks. And then someone would say, no, there's actually new things. And then you would go after that. But honestly, I didn't like it. I love the true ending. I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But the fake ending to me was just... It looked unfinished.
Hmm.
Yeah. You can go.
Okay. I will say I do also agree that the first initial ending is a little bit weak. I think even with it being a little bit more of a darker tone, they could have done a little bit more to flesh out that ending a little bit more instead of just going straight to credits and then the end question mark. But knowing what we know about the Messenger and this being tied to the universe of the Messenger, we know that the concept of time and loops is really, really essential to the storyline. So I think from their point of view, in addition to just kind of playing into the trope, I think it was also kind of tying into that a little bit, where there is this other reality where things actually happened properly and you can recorrect and correct the loop essentially. Also, because I kind of knew about this ending just from people talking about it online, because I didn't finish the game until well into September, early October, so I had already seen people talking about the ending, so I knew there was extra stuff to do. So all of the stuff that you do to unlock the perfect ending, you can do before you beat the game the first time. So then when you go in to do the final true ending, you can basically just go straight to that. So it wasn't really that much of a disruption to the flow of my gameplay personally. But yeah, it was a little bit weird. I think they had their reasons for it. Whether or not they were good, you can agree or disagree, but that's kind of what I was kind of theorizing about it.
I hate it. You guys, everyone's gonna be like, and I wasn't a fan. No, I hate it. I hate when games do this. Okay, let me add some context to that. I hate it because of the requirements to unlock the ending, specifically collecting all those stupid rainbow conch. Like, I get there's guys, but like, that is not fun or good game design, in my opinion. If there was additional story content after just the credits, and it's like, here, feel free to like go fight these optional bosses and like unlock, and then it'll unlock some more stuff, which nobody said the true ending yet, so I'm gonna hold off, even though I know we're in spoilers. But if that was just it, like go fight some bosses, like continue on with the game, great. I wouldn't have a problem that you rolled credits already. But the fact that there's like all these additional things you have to do really drive me nuts. I think the only thing that like bothers me more than this in games is like new game plus is required to like see the true ending. Like, you want me to play the whole game again to get like a marginally different ending? Shout out Alan Wake 2. Which I love.
Listen,
I love Alan
I haven't
Wake
even
two,
beat I, Alan Wake 2 yet. I'm at like the second to last level. You hold your tongue, sir.
I'm not gonna say anything, but you can do the new game plus in that a lot quicker, by the way, than the first run. So that is my only like big issue when games do stuff like this. Like, I just looked it up on YouTube because I'm like, for me, it's not worth the time and effort to like sit down with a guide, go collect all this stuff. And I think the ending is a much better ending than what we originally got, because I remember beating the final boss and then it just kind of ends. And I'm like, what? Like, no, we still got more going on. Like, we didn't wrap everything up, but they're like, we're going to fly away like Captain Planet.
Yeah, it's so unresolved, right? It's really not resolved.
Hey guys, yeah. could you hear me before? Just because my Discord light keeps lighting up randomly. So like, if I start talking, or did that just mute?
No,
that just muted.
Okay, good.
That just muted. Yeah.
Discord just being a little weird on my end. Sorry, apologies. Okay. As someone who has not wrapped the credits yet, if I could say, I'll give a bit of a critique. I both enjoy the writing and don't. I feel like there are some issues that I have where I feel like the overarching story itself isn't interesting. And sometimes I fight my ADHD and myself are fighting to just press X. But the thing that is the driver for me to keep going is the relationship between the characters. And that's the thing that keeps me going. But my feeling of how like wrapping the credits isn't actually the ending, I have to see it for myself, right? But that's, to me, yeah, in the age of like YouTube, where you could just look up the real ending, I don't like that. I would like to maybe like, it's the credits start wrapping and then all of a sudden there's a cut and go, oh wait, there's like more, akin to, you know, just a hint and a nudge at God of War Ragnarok does it, like a Kojima-esque like way of handling it. That would be I think far more suited. It has to get you going. Something isn't right here, and not in the fact of like you're looking at it through a critic line or eye. You're looking at it going, something ain't right here, and I need to explore more of it. And I don't know if that ending does that.
So the initial ending does give like a little tease that like, hey, there's something to figure out. But it's one of those old school tropes where it's like, we're going to show you a vague picture. Gotcha. And now like, here you go. Go try to figure out what we're trying to tell you to do.
Okay. Again, I'm excited to get there. Also, a quick aside. Did anybody play this on their portal? Is any portal pals in the audio? Okay, Drellish is. There you go. I have played this game exclusively on the PlayStation Portal as of right now. Now, the only other critique I would have as well is, like, I started this in August. All the games came out in September and October, and I had to drop it for coverage. And then I picked it back up. There's not like an, like a, again, maybe I'm an idiot, but there's not like a quest log of like, hey, just mm-hmm. so you know, you've been gone for a minute. We need to get to like this point right here. Mm-hmm. It's just like mm-hmm. a, you should know this and bye. It, like it just, there's no log. And that's the thing that I keep on, I having to go to like walkthroughs going, okay, so where did this, where does this person go next in this vague YouTube walkthrough so I can remember and get there.
I didn't stop playing, but I forgot where that place was. I had to look it up because one thing that it's also something that's common for these kind of games, and understand why they did this, but the map, it's straight up sucks. It's hard to find things on there, and you need actually to remember where things were before doing things. So
yeah,
Flam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys are saying. I'm kind of in the same boat. I didn't love it. And when it comes to like unlocking the true ending, I don't think you can do it without looking it up, right? Like there's no way in the mm-hmm. game to figure out what you need to do to actually unlock it, which seems kind of like unnecessarily gatekeepy to me. Like mm-hmm. that's the best way to experience the story. Why would you put it behind
I was gonna say, well, you can if you do literally everything and bash your head against the wall. But
right, yeah.
Yeah, for me, I think I did speak to Marcus how I rated this game. For me, this is very conducive, or at least it's a sign or a question that I have with regards to how did the teams actually work together. And it's almost like you have a story team and you have like a game mechanics team, and you know, when the plot line was decided, you know, where to end the game, the plot line team, the story team were on holiday, right? So, and it's like almost like the game designers came in or and said, this is exactly where we end the game. And it's almost like it's doing a disservice or a dishonor to people who wanted more story. I think it's okay if, like Kevin, you just skip through all the dialogue and you just go for the action.
Don't do that.
How do you beat all these games then? How do you do it?
I know, Kevin, I'm just teasing. But it's almost like, okay, if you're not really invested in the story, it's quite okay to end it here. And for me, I'm really trying to think, or at least figure out what was their choice to actually have that ending there. If the assumption was, you know, guys, we actually don't want you, this is not really an ending, this is kind of a false ending, we want you to continue the game, this is actually planned. And that question mark at the end was just too much or too weak of a sign of an impulse to say, you know, the game isn't finished. There's still a major story to tell. So I think, story-wise, it actually felt, the way that this game ended felt like the initial Final Fantasy game. If this game was called Final Fantasy, I'd say, okay, kill the boss, goodbye, that's it, right? No major story plot, right? But it's not. And I think with regards to what the studio is trying to do, they kind of missed their mark. They weren't true to their DNA. If the story component is one that they do want to follow. If it's just gameplay and to say, hey, guys, you know, we're going to make some beautiful art, some beautiful pixels, enjoy, then maybe. But we just talked in question two how much depth there is to the story. It just deserved a different ending, okay? And I think that they did themselves a disservice by ending it there. So hopefully there's going to be some lessons learned. So
yeah, the one thing that the rainbow conscious thing is, I think, is the one that really annoyed the most people. Mm-hmm. I personally am a completionist, so I'm always try to get those things, but to make it mandatory to see some part of the story, that's real bad. The others, I mean, there are additional boss fights. These are fine. But this, you actually had to backtrack, and there are some of them that are pretty much impossible to find. So that one is that one really hurt.
And I will never again put my trust in a parrot. If that makes sense, right? So I didn't follow a guide. I just said, okay, they have a parrot for this. Let me hear what the parrot has to say. My goodness. Okay, so I'll leave it at that. Any other impulses before we move on?
Just, I think New Game Plus actually is very bad in this one. I think, because usually when I play New Game Plus, I expect things to be a little bit harder and to give me a different experience. And the fact that the bosses and all the monsters had the same power level as before, and now I'm super overpowered, it kind of made it pointless. I mean, I did it because of the platinum trophy, because it was kind of required for the hardest trophy, but I didn't really enjoy it, so I didn't really finish it. So I just stopped the platinum trophy and let it go.
It's an issue. Definitely. So the last trophy that I got was Bouncy, and I was way too overpowered for, what was it, 25, right? 25 hits that you need to have. I was way too overpowered for that to happen. So Joe, try and get Bouncy. If you're trophy hunting, try and get Bouncy ASAP and try and get it with one of the bosses.
I think I got it. I'm gonna okay. Check a look. On my Portal.
Okay, very good. Yeah. Very good. And by the way, guys, if you play it on Portal, this game is, it's beautiful anyway. On Portal, it's like absolutely stunning. Sorry, it is a work of art.
I played it mostly on my ROG Ally, and it's great for handheld, I will say. Totally. Portal, whatever you want.
Totally.
Yeah, I played it on the Switch, on the OLED Switch.
It's like 100% on Steam Deck.
Ah, there we go. Ah, nice. But it's definitely Portal is the way to go for this. Okay, great. Then we'll talk afterwards which is the other trophy that you need to keep an eye on. Because that's the one that I think took me like 40 hours to get. So
hot damn.
Okay.
Michael's an outlier when it comes to trophy stuff. So don't take that too much to heart.
I feel it in my bones. Like I got, what is it? I got like 60 something platinums, and I'm like, I'm on the road to 100, and this is one of the games that like I'm eyeing to plat. And like also part of me is like, can I do Baldur's Gate 3? Is this possible? But I
don't know. It's not. It's too much work.
Yeah.
Let's quickly go. I mean, I just told you my stress that I had with getting Bouncy in New Game Plus or the second part of the game and how hard that was. So how did you enjoy the combat mechanics, and did you have any favorite strategies? So let's quickly talk about that.
Ooh, can I?
Yeah.
May I?
Go. Joe, Joe.
Holy crap, guys. I really like the combat in this game. Ooh-wee. I really do want to shout out Sea of Stars, and I know the common theme here is Baldur's Gate 3 for really opening my mind to turn-based combat. And, you know, I don't have, like, Chrono Trigger or Chrono, you know, the series in my mind's eye when thinking about this game. So, like, there's no references that I could bring back. But as a newcomer to this genre, I love the special abilities and how active they are. So, like, the Moonerang is, like, I was bound to get Bouncy super early on in this game because, like, that was one of my favorite abilities. I love abilities where it's like, yeah, it's your turn to cast, but being more active and proactive with your casts are actually beneficial to combat. So having to learn when the best time to press, you know, X so that like I get to reflect my Moonerang and hit all the enemies. When you start getting that rhythm down, it feels really good. Like being proactive of like, yeah, you chose Fireball or like Rain of Fire or whatever, but like you have to charge it up yourself feels really great. Feels really, really great. So the combat in itself, I think it, because you're so like proactive, even in your own, you know, when it's your turn or not, like being able to deflect a certain amount of damage when they try to hit you, it's kind of like looking for the frame. And once you start to learn that pattern, you're like, okay, so thunder is going to be at, you know, it's going to be a little bit after that second, like, arc hits. That's when I need to time it. Feels so good. And I love the abilities where you get to, you know, the combo system, where you get to unlock it and you, you know, as you unlock more characters and, you know, get deeper into their story, you're learning new abilities. Like, the one that I just think... And sometimes you choose one because it looks cool in that moment. I know it's not the smartest thing to do, but like I love when like Val jumps off of Garl's like shield and just like whacks someone. Like, I love the animation work, and I think that's where Sea of Stars truly shines for me. Because again, like the overarching story, it's like it's good, it's really good, but to me, it's like, all right. Let me get to the next engagement, because that's where I really like to spend most of my time with this game. I would say my strategies have been, and I'm really interested to hear yours, guys, because to me it's like, all right, so I'm maining Val. Val is my gal, and then it's Fireboy, just because of his fireball. I don't again like to me like his character. I'm like whatever, and then like. Garl has it sucks. It's because like I want to play more, but like it's Garl. It's always gonna be Garl. It just feels right that he's in my party. Because to me, it's like he's the support class. He's the one that's gonna feed me, you know, in the middle of battle, so that I can keep going with Val and just totally kick ass. So my strategy is having, and maybe it's not the best strategy, but it's like. It's really about, I'm leveling up like magic attack so very much in this game, where the way I've been playing, it's like, it's about burning the enemies faster than they can hit me, and Garl being the one that heals my character. So I don't necessarily need a tank. I just need something that really hits hard. So that's been my strategy so far. It's all about like high DPS for me.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I'll talk about my strategy in a minute, but I did want to point out that what I think one of the positives about what Joe is saying is, if they had chosen not a action focused turn based system, like with the hitting the button at the right time, I think that this game wouldn't be as highly rated as it is. I think people would have probably just been like, it's another turn-based JRPG. And the action system isn't new. Like, it's been in plenty of other games. Like, Super Mario RPG has it this year. Yeah.
And I think Octopath has it, remembering correctly.
I believe so. Octopath, from the little I played of Octopath 2. So I think that was a benefit. So my party, and this is where I completely differ from Joe, I used Val, Zael, and Sarai the entirety of the game, essentially. And the reason for that is I don't think Garl is a support class, but Val has an ability where she can rain healing on everyone, which kind of, I'm not getting hurt enough to make it worth it to have a dedicated healer. So I'm going to go full frontal assault and try to do as much DPS as possible. And I kept Zael in because the fireball is awesome. I think that's like one of the best moves in the game.
I got to say, Zael to me is like my least, like I find him so
He's dull.
He's dull. I really wish if I could say, and maybe it happens after the credits, but like if it was like four pals instead of three, I would have dug that a whole lot more. Because like, yeah, there's so many characters that like I want to, you know, study more, and not just like through the story, but like via combat. And I think three is a bit limiting, because the way I play, I get so comfortable with a play style that I'm afraid to take chances. So like by the time like I got Sarai, I call her Siri. It's really new to me. So like when I got like Shirai, I was just like, I really love like her moveset, but I'm afraid to use her because to me, you know, the two main characters, they're supposed to be there. And I, again, the fireball is pretty OP too. So like, and Garl's my boy. So I think if they added just one more little slot in there where I could like,
You mean like three and four E4 or four party members at a time instead of three.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. For long story short.
How many party members do you have, Joe? Because I noticed you were like four buddies, and I'm like, there's six.
No, there's six. All right.
So, to be honest, I barely use those other two that you get either. I'm like, you're coming in when someone's like dead. Yeah. And I need, or you have a specific lock I need to break. Those are the only time you're getting used. I didn't really enjoy the way that their abilities worked. I basically did every battle the same. I was like, I'm a Moonerang. It's worked the last 50 encounters. Yep. Why don't we give it a go again? Yep. And then like you, I don't know if anybody else did this, but like you turn, you have the visual indicator for the timing of the moves. So I just turned those on and I'm like, it was very easy to get like 50 plus like Moonerangs, like, because I would like, I'd close my eyes and you just hear the little like ding, and like you could just the timing, like I'm a big Rock Band person, like all right, like that was my childhood, so I'm all about like just hearing sound, like I don't really need the visual after a while. So at that point, it was like I would be wiping entire people at once with just the Moonerang. And then after that, like you do the fireball, you do Sarai's, which Sarai has also one like a Moonerang where they hop out of the portal. Yeah, it's super. This game is all about just feeling satisfied with your combat. And I love that. That is great for me.
I struggled with the timing a lot. Especially Sarai's. I could never seem to get it. I don't know if I needed, like, I turned on the relic or whatever it was that shot at the star when you hit it right. And I just couldn't get it down. And Rashan was the same way. I really struggled with his. Everybody else's, I could get the timing okay. But I don't know if it was just an animation thing or I just wasn't picking it up. I struggled with the bouncy trophy, too. It took me a long time to get it. So I was never getting 50. I probably got it a handful of 25 pluses in the entire playthrough, and I did it. I was trying to get it from the start.
Sarai's animation is definitely misleading for her timing.
Very.
Yeah. I never got it.
When she's all the way up in the air, like I don't know when it, and like I've been hitting some like good combos with her, but I'm it's like a guessing game for me.
It's like just as she throws the dagger.
Yep.
So once she throws it, I press it.
As she's throwing the dagger, yeah.
Then it speeds up, obviously. Yeah. So like you got to get used to that.
Okay. Bring that down.
Yeah, for me, it was I had a similar strategy. I was with Val and Zale and then Sarai. But mostly because in boss fights, her ability of delaying a spell was really interesting, because sometimes it happened like there was like a lock that I had to break in one attack, and the person or the player, the character was required to do that. I just attacked it with them, so like I required like a moon thing or something like this. So Sarai's ability was really interesting, and but it was mostly it. I had a blast with the combat, honestly. And there's a combo between Zeo and Roshan. There's just a massive pillar of fire that is really awesome and does a lot of damage. So I really like that one, but I only use Roshan for this specific combo. And for me it was the timing thing was interesting. I struggled with that only when I actually had to get the timing right to break a lock or something like this. It was like, dude, I need to get this right, and obviously I would get it wrong. But to me, the combat, what really stuck with me was the fact that the boss fights were very different between it. I mean, there were some repeat fights and they were kind of similar, but The different bosses, they had different things, different locks, different mechanics. Sometimes you had to fight additional things before getting to the boss. And to me, that was really interesting because I was never bored fighting those bosses. With monsters and random encounters, I thought it was a little bit repetitive, especially in some particular areas. But other than that, I think the combat was great. I didn't really use Garl or the other guy that I don't remember him anymore.
Rishan
used for the combo.
Sorry, yeah.
I think it's pronounced Beast.
Something like this.
Mr. Glass Drop or whatever he's guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But other than that, I think I had a blast with that combat system.
Very cool. Flim Flam.
Yeah, I think they did a good job of making it not feel too repetitive. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying there, Dasime. I mean, some turn-based RPGs they can get to the point where they feel a little too repetitive, but I think there's enough there in this game that it doesn't, right? There's the lock system, there's the live mana, there's the timing, all that stuff kind of makes it feel, it's still a little bit repetitive at the end of the day, right? But I really appreciated that. I think for the most part, I would use Zale, Belair, and Garl for the most part, and then swap in and out whenever you needed to break certain locks, right? I mean, I'm classically bad at video games, right? So no shame. I definitely use some relics to kind of make it a little easier. Just because I don't like getting frustrated when I play a game, right? So I turned a couple of those on just to make it a little bit more enjoyable for me.
Gotcha.
I mean, I don't know if you guys ever noticed, how do you pronounce it? Bist? Bist or best or whatever?
I think it's beast.
Beast?
I started pronouncing it beast because it just kind of made more sense.
So it's really cool if you have beast in your party when you're traversing. I don't know if you guys noticed, but like he kind of changes form when you're doing different things, like when you're climbing a ladder or jumping from platform to platform. That's really cool. I thought that was awesome.
Very nice. Colin?
Yeah, I was kind of similar to a lot of the guys here where my main party was usually once I unlocked her, it consisted of Valir, Zale, and Sarai. Just because I found the three of them had the most well-rounded tool set. And Sarai's delay move was almost essential in some of the boss fights to get their locks broken and stuff. Because they would, like mentioned earlier, it's like they would come in, it's like you have one turn to somehow break like three different element locks. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh. But then it's like, oh, we can swap in Sarai or just have Sarai use her delay move. And then I think Rishan had one also that would break just a random lock if you got the timing right. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty useful. Actually, one thing I really liked about this game that hadn't been mentioned yet is just the party swapping mechanic that they kind of borrowed from Final Fantasy X. Like Final Fantasy X is favorite game of all time. I love that game to death. But every time I see a party swapping mechanic like in that game, I'm like, ooh. So I was hot swapping in and out as the situation demanded and stuff a lot. So I got a lot of use out of pretty much every character. I think I tended to use Garl the least, but aside from that, like the two additional characters that you get later on in the game, Rishan and Beast, I kind of swapped them in and out and played with them a lot. I liked that Rishan also was able to simultaneously do multi-elemental damage. So he had an attack that would do poison and arcane damage at the same time. So that made it really useful for breaking locks late game and stuff. But yeah.
Very good. I think I'm really excited that Joe has kind of found, you know, his appreciation.
Boys, I'll be right back. My apologies.
All good. His appreciation for turn-based. Because I think that's always hard. And I can't imagine, you know, you can't have it any other way or enjoy turn-based as like a live action game or RPG with all those components in there. You know? So, and I think that the way that the combat was designed was actually here quite clever. I think another thing that I appreciated was, I'm not sure how you guys went for food, But for me, it wasn't very much about health, but much more about MP. So mm-hmm. I had lots of stuff in there to kind of just boost the MP for them to do their combos and for do their magic attacks, so to say. So that was a key component. And I must be honest, right? Those ultimate beauties, right? So with regards to what they could do, giant fireball, Sarai with, you know, the ship cannons, well done. So, and I think I really appreciated, you know, what turn base could mean in this context. So something that wasn't mentioned is you don't have to continue the same order, so you can also change the order if you want, which was also great. So Sarai was also very key for me to start delaying the turns of the bosses, so that that really helped me. Really appreciated.
I will add a critique, I think, and this is probably the biggest critique of the combat, is you don't really expand on your moves that much. Mm. Like, I used Moonerang from start to finish. Like, you get a few more, but in terms of like most RPGs, you're very limited in what like your moves your characters do learn and get throughout the story.
You got your three basic ones, right? And then the special ones like your combos and your ultimates, right? Yeah.
Also, let me skip ultimate scenes after I've seen them a certain number of times.
Yes,
very good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Way too long.
Way too long, some of them.
Yeah.
Totally.
One thing that hasn't been brought up here that I think is worth mentioning is I certainly appreciated how the game handled being knocked out. I really liked... you can use it to as a strategy. It's like, I don't want to waste food. I don't want to use MP on healing at the moment. I think I can withstand a couple round knockout of this one character. Just let them be knocked out, and then they'll be back with half health after you kind of get through that. I really, really liked that, the way they handled kind of losing your hit points.
Agreed.
And yeah, I for think sure. In some situations, it makes more sense to wait for them to come back than wasting resources, right?
Well, your resources are much more limited in this. Like, you get like 10 slots, but you don't have like traditional items. Like, you don't have like a Phoenix down, like from a Final Fantasy. Like, you don't have things to just a horde of items, right? That I often am like, I gotta save these. What if I need them for the final boss? You know.
Very true. And
another thing I kind of liked was just the synergy between the standard and the magic attacks. Like, you would unleash all your huge magic attacks and stuff, and then you had to recharge MP. Well, how do you do that? You can use an item, but also your standard attacks would also restore MP every time you hit, which I thought was a really cool feature. And they really, really did try to minimize the amount of time that you spent in a menu trying to sift through items and stuff, and tried to keep all of the focus on the actual combat as well, which was really cool.
Absolutely.
I think
go ahead, Marcus.
I was just going to say, I think they've given you a broad set of tools, and you can approach each situation, each fight, in multiple different ways and still be successful. Like, there's not only one path to being able to beat this fight. And I really like the way that you can approach things in your own way, and there's lots of different ways to get from A to B. That was cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. I didn't discover until close to the end of the game how the ultimates worked. So use your regular attack to build up combo, and then you have to use combo to build up the ultimate, right? I figured that out maybe like 75% of the way through the game, which is hilarious.
Welcome, Flim Flam, to the world of RPGs. Welcome.
Yep. One thing that happened during boss fights was that I constantly delayed the ultimate moves because I had to break a lock, and I was just too busy trying not to get killed, and I never got time to actually release the ult attack.
Did you guys use your relics in any way?
Yes.
To help you?
Yes.
Okay. I think I the only one that I did was the one that was required for the water technique trophy, but I think it was the only one.
Now, that's the one that I missed, so that's why I needed to kind kind of re-engage, overpowered with all the and Bouncy obviously was missing as well, no? with all the bosses. And I think that's the one that I wanted to say to Joe: make sure that you do this one early, because it'll actually save you a lot of time. I'm just checking at the time, so it's well, here in Germany, 19:05. So I'm gonna see whether we can wrap this up in the next half an hour. So just for your time, just for you to know if you're planning anything. So we should be through in about half an hour. So hopefully that's okay. It's a little bit shorter than the previous one, but hopefully that's okay with you guys.
We'll see. We're not done yet.
We'll see. We'll see. That's the plan. Let's go to question five. And how did the mini games found in Sea of Stars? So we had wheels, and we also had fishing, compared to your favorite mini games found in other RPGs. So who feels they want to start the discussion?
I spent a lot of time playing Wheels, man. It was, to me, was really fun. I mean, there was a lot of luck involved, but it was the mechanic, the sound design. It was really great, and I felt really compelled to play as much as others, other mini games and other JRPGs. For the fishing part, it was just for the trophy, and honestly, I thought it to be a little bit annoying.
Did you have any figures that you stuck with to say, okay, these are always part of my game plan?
The assassin and the wizard. It was essentially the ones that I used most of the time.
Very good. Very good.
Colin. I feel like...
Marcus, go for it.
Sorry. I feel like I might approach minigames in RPGs a similar way that Kevin, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, in that I don't usually engage with them at all.
Yeah, didn't do it. Didn't do either of these things.
Yeah. So I didn't touch. Well, I did the fishing because I was looking for the trophy. So I knew that I had to do the fishing. I didn't touch wheels until post game at all. And I'm actually kind of disappointed that I didn't touch it until post game, because wheels is really fun. It's really good. I thought it was going to be harder to learn and harder to master than it kind of is. There's definitely there's a random element to it. There's sometimes you're just not going to win because of the way the wheel ends up. But it's a really good game. So I don't have a lot to compare it to in terms of other RPGs, because I don't tend to engage with stuff unless it's necessary for the main part. Mm. And really, these mini games aren't. So, but Wheels is good. You should try it, Kev. You go back.
I think I'm going to, because I'm like you, Marcus. I don't do the mini games unless there's a trophy tied into it. So I remember there when is. They what's that? And there is?
There is.
Yeah. Okay, good. So like I had the option to play it, and I'm like, I'll come back to you. I don't need. But shout out to fishing, because the fishing in this game is super fun. And I've spent, I think, a good, like, 20 minutes when I didn't have to. Just getting all the fish in the pond and, like, coming back. It was a way for me to, like, easily make a couple of ham sandwiches, you know? to like, prepare for, like, the next chapter. So, shout out to fishing, because it made it a ton of fun. Ton of fun.
Did everybody catch how to do the fishing? Because it took me a while to realize that you had to be in this
corridor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I figured it out in the demo. And I don't know if anybody else played the demo. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was actually
okay. I remember playing the demo, and I think the fishing was way harder in the demo. I don't know if anyone else played it and noticed that, but I'm with Joe. I did so much fishing. I think I finished the game with like 800 pieces of fish. For no reason.
No, it's just because it's fun.
Play it.
You know?
Yeah, it is. Tons of fun.
Well, I only learned how to properly do it once you had to fish that gigantic one to get into the, I think it's the Golden Pelican restaurant.
The restaurant, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That that one was so hard that I actually had to learn how to do it properly. And the only part that from fishing that I really found it was annoying is that there is one rainbow conch that you get after given like plenty of fish to a kid. Mm-hmm. And it takes so long to do that. So that was the part I was like, ugh. I can't do it anymore.
I know that. I know the conch thing. First off, I don't mind that, like, so how I play games, and this is probably why, like, I'm probably way further off than I think I am, is like, and this is the reason why I don't stream. I'll check all the corners of a room before leaving it. Like, I am that slow. So when I first got to that town, I spent easily like 2 hours there. I'm like, there has to be hidden things that I don't know. And there, a lot of times there were. And like that kid needing like, what is it, like 50 fish or whatever? I'm like, you just gave me the best excuse to waste so much time, dude.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I think, Joe, we are the same. I mean, so in our office when I was in publishing, we used to spend every lunchtime playing Quake with each other. So a bit like leaderboards and things like that. And so my first hour with Quake, I was just kind of going into rooms and kind of wondering what the walls looked like. And I said, Michael, you're playing Quake like an adventure game. Stop doing that. So I'm totally with you. But I'm glad I'm doing it in Alan Wake.
Hint, very hint. Glad.
Alan Wake 2. So,
yeah, because the collectible trophies in that one make me want to put my fist through a wall. You know,
just a little note. If you don't have the get the crossbow trophy, it's glitched in New Game Plus.
Oh, okay.
Hit him once.
No, like the collecting the stash to get the crossbow is glitched in New Game Plus. So get it in your first playthrough.
Get it in the first playthrough. Okay. Gotcha. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Very nice. Let's quickly hear Colin.
Yeah, I like the fishing a bit. I spent definitely more time fishing than I did on wheels, but I still think to this day my favorite fishing minigame in an RPG is Final Fantasy 15. I spent so much time in that game fishing. It was almost a game in itself to me, but the fishing in this one, it was pretty simple to get a grasp on. I didn't struggle too much with figuring out what I was supposed to do with it, but it eventually fell to the wayside of the main story, like mini games tend to do for me. I tried wheels. I played a couple matches and I was like, this is a little bit too over my head still. I'll come back to it. And then just didn't yet, but
gotcha.
It was good. I liked it. I liked the concept of it. It was just a little bit too much for me at the time. I was just like, I don't know if I want to get into this just yet, but I liked that they went and designed something, because a lot of RPGs would just kind of throw like a card game, like a Gwent or something in to fill the slot that this mini game kind of filled. So it was cool to see them kind of do a little bit more of an original take on something.
And good that you mentioned Final Fantasy 15, because that was the other game that had a warrior cook. If you think about it, right? Yes.
That's it. I've come up with a new recipe.
Very nice. Very, very nice. Okay. Kevin.
I didn't do either of these things.
The end. You have to.
Yeah, basically. I really don't care about mini games in I think Like a Dragon is probably the only JRPG that I will like check out the mini games in, and that's because they're like actual games a lot of the time. Like, you want to play Virtua Fighter? I'm like, yeah, sure, yeah, why not? Or their business management game is really good, but I can't be bothered. No, I don't like that. I don't like that one. That one's creepy. They got like FMV women giving me that. No. Most of the time for these types of things, fishing depends on the game. It depends on like how necessary it is. But like I didn't need to do fishing here, so I didn't do it.
So thanks for that, Kevin. I'm going to go with a question just now back to you, specifically with regards to fishing in the context of JRPGs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to quickly mention my favorite fishing game of other RPGs, and that's going to be Persona 4 Golden. So if you have not done fishing in Persona 4 Golden, there's a whole lore that goes about catching a specific fish, and all the fishing that you do leads up for you to be able to catch a specific fish. And it's awesome. So we also see obviously something like that in Sea of Stars, if you think about the lore of the fishing and where it eventually leads you. But I think that fishing in JRPGs, and I'm going to throw this back to Kevin, it is pretty standard, right? So regardless if you look at a Trails game, if you look at a Persona game, I mean, fishing is kind of always included. Have you had any other, I don't know, positive fishing experiences?
I like the fishing in Tales of Arise. That might be I know some people don't like it, but that's like you have to hit the you have to hit like the button prompts at the right time to catch the fish. And I've done fishing in Trails, the Trail series, but I don't really care for it. They make it into like a little club, like catching a fish and get like a new badge, kind of like Pokemon did, where you like improve your, you know. Yeah, there are good fishing mini games out there in RPGs, but I again tend not to care about them unless it's necessary.
And there's a little bit of Nier Automata as well, so I'll leave it at that. So
Also, Drellish, I didn't know that there was fishing in Persona 4 Golden, and yes. I played that game for like 120 hours.
There is a specific storyline that takes you there, and it's I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So very nice. Any other thoughts on other mini games, perhaps? God, let's not think of The Witcher. Sorry, Marcus.
We can't get through any meetup with Michael without mentioning The Witcher 3. So that's the bad spot.
Do you have any other, maybe, you know, not fishing, but any other mini games that that you really enjoyed in any of the RPGs that you've played? Colin, let me hear from you. You must have.
Well, I mean, I'm repping the Final Fantasy VIII shirt today, so I gotta call out Triple Triad. I mean,
very cool.
That's the OG there.
Yes, very good. I'm not gonna mention Final Fantasy X. We don't talk Final Fantasy X here. Some people love it, some people don't. Joe, let me hear from you. Any other mini game from an RPG or game that you've played?
RPG or game that I've played. Honestly, mini games don't strike me as like, I mean, strike from Horizon, but they're all there for me to get a trophy and get out. So like, there's nothing truly memorable that I can think of. Because they're usually just not in depth enough. But I love if a fishing mechanic hits, like a fishing mechanic hits. So again, turning back to Sea of Stars, they really hit it out of the park with that. Fishing mechanics? God bless.
Very nice. Marcus, let me hear from you.
Well, I don't have anything else to say. I don't think. I really liked Wheels. I don't think I have, like I said, I don't really engage with mini games outside of, yeah.
Not even in The Witcher. Oh, man.
Not even in The Witcher. Sorry, buddy. Yeah.
All good. Let's quickly bring things to a close. And I know that we have not touched on all the subjects, but I'm also just being mindful of the time. So, you know, if you want to close in about 15 minutes, is there anything that we missed that you wanted to discuss today over and above the things that we talked about?
I want to touch on Easter eggs. I think this game does a really good job with Easter eggs. I would suggest, highly, highly suggest, is if you haven't had an opportunity to collect and see what to do with all the flimsy hammers, to do that at the very end. It's kind of the last thing that you need to do. It's a really cool, and I won't spoil it because it is really cool. It kind of has some, Did you look it up, Michael? I remember asking
not
you.
Yet. No, yeah, actually, not yet. Yeah, not yet. Now that you mention it, I just realized I need to get back to it. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Even if you don't want to go back and do it, which it takes a fair amount of time, just look it up. Yeah, just look it up. It's good.
Very cool.
So I think this game does a really good job with Easter eggs.
Very cool.
And this one is easily missable, right? Because it's not required for the plat. So it's most people actually miss that one.
Yeah, this was brought up before, but in terms of the music, when we went to a location that had previously occurred in the Messenger, and it was a remixed track of the same area in the Messenger. I was like, yes, this is it. It was so cool. Yeah. I love it when the remixed music is fantastic.
Very nice.
I want to mention Traverso in this game. It's fantastic. It's like, it's not always the case in JRPGs or in modern games. Since we're talking about Alan Wake, Traverso in there is actually quite a nightmare.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. Everything is fun. Like climbing mountains is fun. Seeing Beast transform into a monowheel to go for a rope. It's so much fun. It's something that I wasn't expecting to happen. And it's quite dynamic as well. You don't take that long to go from one place to another as you would expect in a game like this.
Yeah. That's actually a great thing that you pointed out, Desmond, because like the one thing that I have to really give credit to, the map isn't, well, non-existent, but like traversing through like dungeons, traversing through the world is really good. They think, I think they have they're actively thinking about, your time behind the controller and what your thumbs are doing in that moment to keep on switching it up. So it's still engaging. So they're always thinking about engagement, even when it comes to traversal. And one of the things that I find when it comes to like 2D games is it's very much like, my thumb is only moving across, the analog stick, right? Here, they're just like, how about we add, like, to me, the thing that broke my brain is when they gave me a grapple hook, and I'm like, immediately, game of the year, sign us up. So that, like, I'm constantly thinking about, or my thumb's constantly moving about the circle button and the X button. It's getting me thinking, and it's also really great when it comes to littering things in the environment. Maybe sometimes to a fault with some of those conch chests. But they keep on giving you things to find in almost every room. So you are, for an insane person like me, you are rewarded for really taking your time and exploring every single, not just biome, but section of that biome. So, the level design is, to me, really, really strong in this game.
I thought interesting.
I was expecting a round of applause.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Something the game doesn't really clear up is if you look at the antagonist, Eferul, I hope I pronounced it correctly, and the relationship between him and Roshan, so the flesh monster and the eternal alchemist. It's not a black and white relationship, right? There is a lot of sympathy, I think, that Roshan feels towards Eferul, even though I think their backstory is kind of similar, right? Because they're on this journey of eternal life and how they've achieved it through different means. But there is, I always feel that there is this sympathy for the villain somehow in here, right? And I'm not sure how you guys feel. And sorry, this is kind of a little bit of a spoiler territory, Joe. So maybe you can't add too much to this. But maybe for those who have finished the game, I always found it interesting that there was something that bounded them together, and they were not really always truly, enemies fighting each other to the death. So
a yin and yang.
A little bit of a yin and yang. So I'm not sure how the rest of you feel. Gabe.
It plays to the theme of friendship as well, because they are originally friends. They actually grew apart, and that actually this is what caused all the issues. Honestly, I love that because when you hear about a villain called the Flashmancer, you imagine that super villainy villain that just wants to destroy the world. It's just going to, there's no reasoning with them. And there are some dialogue, especially there are some flashbacks between Roshan and him, and where they discuss things, and you can see that they are actually still friends. And this is really important, because this is pretty much what the game is all about. And it's interesting to see the main villain also play out to that thing.
Absolutely. And I'm not sure whether do we see them? No, I have not played the Messenger. Do we see the Eternal Alchemist or the Fleshmancer? in the messenger at all? I mean, if you want to spoil it for those of you who've played it.
Rashawn's in the messenger. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Cool. So the messenger, I think, is a must play, right? If you enjoyed Sea of Stars, we should go back for those who haven't and give messenger a try. So I see some nodding heads. Yes. We can hear nods, obviously, on audio very well. So
I would say the messenger is essential. Essential if you enjoy 2D action platformers. Yes.
Gotcha. Colin, you wanted to say?
Yeah, I haven't beaten the messenger yet, but I've gotten far enough to see like the thing.
Gotcha.
People that have played the messenger will know the thing. But yeah, I mean, just even as far as I've gotten in the game, the amount of things that Sea of Stars calls back to is not insignificant. So it's definitely worth playing through, especially if you do like 2D action games.
Very cool. Thanks, guys. Let's move on to the final question of the evening. So what is one word you would use to describe your experience with Sea of Stars?
So I can start because I've thought a little bit about this. So for me, the word is nostalgic. And so, you know, obviously this is a throwback, a love letter to classic JRPGs. And that's how it was for me. There is so many references to old games. We haven't really even touched on it too much, but like the Chrono Trigger kind of like storyline, there's very much some parallels between Chrono and Garl in terms of where that character goes. So it is nostalgic through and through. So yeah, that's my word.
Last one.
I like that word, nostalgic. Because there is something truly nostalgic about this game. But again, it's like, maybe it's like a window into like childhood, right? Like of what games were, you know, when you were a kid or teen or whatever, like just taking a trip back to a simpler time and kind of looking at it and just admiring it, right? And I think that there's just, you know, nostalgic's a word. I just think it's just like beautiful. It's like that the one word I keep on going back to this game because every shot is just so beautiful. I think even, I don't know, because, you know, I went to get water while listening to y'all, and then my dog caused a ruckus. But like the cutscenes are gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. So like honestly, the word that I keep on going back to is just beautiful. So the game's just gorgeous. Yeah.
Beautiful. Nice one.
Yeah, I would say wonderful. That's just the feeling like I get when I talk about Sea of Stars. And is it a perfect game? No. There's some obvious critiques which we've discussed. But I think for what it is, everything from visuals to gameplay to even the story with its faults, it is a wonderful experience.
I think I'd have to go with charming.
Charming.
You know, the music, the visuals. I mean, it's a feel-good game at the end of the day, right? It's all about friendship and hope and all that kind of stuff. So I think charming is a good way to kind of sum up my experience.
Nice one.
Yeah. I think the word is emotional. I think it was kind of similar to the nostalgic thing, but it was just not only because the story is also quite beautiful and especially the whole Garl arc, it got me really emotional at some point. But also the nostalgia thing, it's like remembering when I was a kid and I my mom wanted to, I don't know, go to dinner, and I had to go with her and had to kind of chase for a save point. And I mean, it's not in this game, it's different because they're actually a little bit easier to find than other games in the past, but that feeling that it evoked was really interesting. And once I finished, I actually felt there was something missing during my day because I spent several hours in this game. So it's how it felt to me.
Beautiful. Thank you. Colin.
I think for me, the word I would use would be comfortable. In that this game is RPG comfort food. Like, there's so much about this game that it just takes everything that we loved from the RPGs of the old days. It reminds me of my first time playing Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy VI for the first time. And it just wraps it up in a nice modern package with a new story to experience and lovable characters and music. I mean, we've definitely chimed in on the music in this podcast. I mean, yeah, comfort for sure.
Very nice, beautiful as well. I would use a plural word, which might sound unusual, truths. So truth, but truth as in plural. Because I think that every character, be it protagonist and antagonist, had their own truth that they were dealing with. And somehow it was all in balance, even though they were not the same, right? If you just look at the antagonists. But they all had a place. And so maybe there isn't such a thing as the one truth, but a lot of little truths, right? So
I'll leave it at that. So, I like
So I really appreciate the time that all of you took. We're kind of exactly in half an hour bringing this, this game, wrapping it up. Thanks so much for your thoughts. Your ideas. I think it was a rich experience also what we had here. And what's up next is actually, we did tease it, but in case you missed it, we're going to be discussing Alan Wake 2 in January. So
I'm at
chapter 3.
Go.
Game of the year, Alan Wake 2.
Go.
I think a very interesting game for us to look at. And it's my first Alan Wake experience, so I missed the first one. And I have thoughts. So I'm looking forward to listening to your thoughts when we meet in January. Marcus, I don't have the dates with me. Do we have a range of dates or a date?
Yeah, we've got a few options for people. So I'll bump the Google form again in the Discord channel. And so we've got two options, well, multiple options on both January 13th and January 14th. So it'll be one of those 2 days at a time probably similar to this. So if anybody here is interested or anybody who's eventually listening to this is interesting, look for the Google form in the By the Players Discord channel, sign up and pick your preferred date, and we'll choose the option that works best for most people.
Perfect. And maybe just as a closing thought, just a sentence from you. How did you find the session? Right, it's our second one. Are we kind of there where we need to be? Just kind of your thoughts, maybe just in a simple sentence or two. Gail, let me start with you. Gabe, sorry.
I think, honestly, to me, it was really nice to discuss it. It's not a game that I played with lots of people that I know of, so it's good to discuss and have hear your thoughts. It's interesting to see that actually these thoughts are very similar to mine, so it was a wonderful experience.
Beautiful. Thank you, Colin.
Yeah, I think it went pretty great. I mean, I was also here for the Spider-Man episode and stuff, and I really enjoyed that talk as well.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back again, guys. I mean, this has been such a wonderful experience. Like, thank you, everyone that facilitates it, Michael, Marcus, Joe, and Kyle. I know you're going to be listening to this after the fact. Thanks, everybody, for doing this. This has been a fun time.
Absolutely. Yeah, we missed your voice, Kyle. I can second that. Yeah. Kevin?
I thought it was good. It was a lovely discussion. I think everyone had a variety of opinions and thoughts, which is all I can hope for in discussing a game. So I think it's pretty boring if everyone comes in. I agree. Like I want diverse things. So which I'm excited for next month already.
Very nice. Oh, very cool. Thanks, Kevin. Flip Flam.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Lucas, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. Definitely enjoyed chatting with you guys. I don't have a ton of friends in real life that enjoy the same kind of games that I do, right?
That's
so kind of turn to communities like this one to just be a nerd and chat about all the stuff that I love. So I was sad that I missed the Spider-Man chat because that was my game of the year, and I'm a huge Spidey fan, but also love Sea of Stars. So
it's on Patreon, and... so join in the fun. So yeah,
for sure. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's a great time.
Very good, Marcus. Maybe your thoughts.
I'm going to critique our session. It was good. It was good. We've got to figure out a way, in my opinion, to tighten these things up a little bit. I mean, it's a tricky balance, I think. We want to get everybody's perspectives in, and we don't want to cut people off. But at the same time, I'd prefer this thing to be closer to 2 hours in length rather than 2.5. So we're going to work on that. If anybody has any suggestions, feel free to DM us.
I'll talk less.
Yeah, it's no one thing, right? And it's not even necessarily an easy thing. Maybe it's just one less question to a discussion topic, something. I'm not sure, but
let's see.
That's certainly something that's on our mind and we're conscious of. So
it's all about when it comes to that. It's when we were talking behind closed doors about your mic last night, which is fine, Marcus. It was fine that.
Yeah. Episode. Okay. I don't know what happened last time.
Honest to goodness, it's just a podcaster brain. So as we're talking and discussing these games and, you know, it's really about letting you guys behind the wheel and me staying back and being the editor, or the producer rather. It's first off my thoughts. It's always awesome to see this community come together and like talk and, you know, like Kyle and I, when we were listening to the Spider-Man talk, it's like, yo, we got so many really smart people in this community. Like, they're way smarter than us. When are they going to realize that? And, you know, when it comes to, like, the podcasting element, you guys will get it. You're getting there. You're already there. What am I talking about? So, like, you know, to me, I think we've started off very, very strong because I love the questions posed. I love everybody answering with such thoughtful critiques. And like, to go back to what Kevin's saying, like, if I'm hearing everybody nod and agree to something, that's why I love to play devil's advocate on the trophy rooms, probably why I'm not the favorite. Then it's just boring and we're just agreeing and it's just like a yes. Mm-hmm. So it's awesome to see the wide range of opinions, the thoughtful discourse. And again, Drellish and Marcus, y'all are just coming into your element so damn well. So I appreciate both of y'all doing this because this is not something that Kyle and I truly have the bandwidth for. Mm-hmm. And so to see y'all come in and swoop in and say, hey, listen, we want to do something for the Trophy Room community. We think it'd be really awesome and whatnot is amazing to see. And it again goes back to how damn lucky we are to have each and every one of y'all here, whether you joined in on the discussion with us live, whether you joined in on the discussion via Patreon, or just the discussions on Discord. I just want to thank everybody for being a member of this show. It just means so damn much. So thank you all so much. So damn much. Cool. That's my thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. And I think with that, I can't add anything to that, Joe. Thanks for those thoughts. I look forward to seeing you guys in January. First of all, I wish you all the best during the Christmas season. So I wish you have some peace, relaxation with your loved ones, be in the present. We can't have it back, so to say. So enjoy just kind of being in the moment, you know, with the people that you love. And for those, if there aren't that many people around that you love or that can love you, Discord community is there, the Trophy Room community is there, so we are here for you guys. So I'll definitely be around between Christmas and New Year if anybody wants to chat and quickly say hello. So from my side, thank you very much, Marcus.
Yeah, thanks all. Nothing else to add to that. Yeah,
perfect.
Appreciate and y'all.
We'll see you guys in January or see you on Discord. Thanks so much. Thanks,
guys.
See you then. Bye. Bye, everyone.
Y'all, I hope you liked that episode. I am so sorry it came out late. Patreon was very weird uploading this episode. So, I hope everything came out right. That being said, though, because this series is new, I want to know y'all's feedback. What would you like to see from it? Is there anything you'd like to be, you know, like added in? Let me know in the comments section down below. Of course, enjoy our next episode. If you're watching in chronological order, our Final Fantasy VII remake episode, where everybody's going to talk about Remake, and I, since I've already played Remake, am going to be playing Final Fantasy VII, the base game, for the first time. So with all that said, with all that out of the way, everybody, we love you all so much. Thank you for supporting this show like y'all do. Keep your wits about you and keep playing, well, Final Fantasy VII.